Zombie Ave. Next case for argument is Haley versus Feinerman, Mr. Gillespie.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Clark Gillespie, and I was appointed to represent Mr. Haley in his underlying case and undertook this appeal on his behalf. Mr. Haley is appealing from an order of the Southern District granting summary judgment on his Section 1983 medical claim in four defendants, Dr. Richard Craig and Adrian Feinerman. We believe the District Court's grant of summary judgment was improper for really two key reasons. First, the District Court ignored this court's standards on the deliberate indifference requirement as expressed in what we believe is a strikingly similar case, Sherrod v. Lingle, and granted.
What do you consider your strongest evidence of deliberate indifference?
Your Honor, I think there are a couple of things. First, if you look at the medical records that are involved here, rather than the self-serving statements of the treating physicians, you know, Mr. Haley had his arm snapped in two on August 6th. He didn't see an orthopedist until October, 2 months later. Dr. Feinerman didn't personally examine Mr. Haley until December 21st of 2000, and there wasn't a second visit and diagnosis of the entrapped nerve of Mr. Haley until January of 2001. There had been a recommendation in October that surgery might be October of 2000, that surgery should be considered. And yet, with all of that, surgery didn't actually occur to correct Mr. Haley's condition until April 9th of 2001. That's 3 months after the orthopedist had said there has to be surgery, and it's over 8 months after his original injury. That is the starting point. We also have the affidavit of Dr. Murley, the surgeon that performed the operation. And in his affidavit, he specifically identifies that he had great difficulty, without using medical terminology, in releasing the nerve, and it actually required that the bone be sawed in half in order to re-release the nerve. Now, this occurred precisely because from the beginning point of the injury in August of 2000, there was no treatment of Mr. Haley that either dealt with the misalignment of the two ends of his bones or the potential for trapped nerve.
You know, this sounds like a malpractice case. It doesn't sound like deliberate indifference. How many times did he see physicians during that eight-month period?
What we would argue, Your Honor, is that both of these physicians acknowledged from the very beginning every x-ray that was taken, every examination that was made, acknowledged that this arm did not align, the bones were not aligned, and that there's a potential for nerve involvement. Despite that, they did nothing that alleviated that condition, and it led to the actual calcification of the arm bone such that surgery was required 8 months later. We believe that actually demonstrates the deliberate indifference.
Let me ask you this. Dr. Krieg thought, though, he did, I mean, it wasn't at the time of the injury, one of the alternatives that was considered, and indeed they followed, was this hanging cast, correct? And then the hope was that it would pull the bones, that gravity would pull the bones into alignment?
The initial treatment for this, right, was to put a cast on the lower portion of the arm and hopefully gravity would somehow align these bones. However, at every point in time that Dr. Craig saw Mr. Haley, it was apparent from x-rays that were taken that the bones were not aligning. Indeed, there is no evidence.
Well, they did consult this fellow Raymond, right?
They did. Well, and that gets into actually our second point on this, is what we believe that the district court improperly resolved fact issues against Mr. Haley. Dr. Ramon was the orthopedist that was eventually consulted. There are, however, the court goes out of its way, however, to come to the conclusion that, as the opinion puts it, plaintiff was treated immediately in a manner that met with the approval of an orthopedist, Dr. Ramon. The reality here, Your Honor, is that at two crucial points in time, one being about 2 weeks after Mr. Haley's initial injury, There is no evidence in this record that that was Dr. Ramon's opinion about what had happened or what should happen.
Well, did Ramon, do you dispute that Ramon said that one of the ways that it could be treated was with this bone stimulator and that Haley agreed to that initially, but then when he found out that he would be confined to the infirmary for 4 weeks, he changed his mind? I mean, that's
yeah, if I could, Your Honor, that's actually the second point in time. My point on this is that 2 weeks after the injury, the district court chose to look at notes that were written by Dr. Feinerman about a supposed phone conversation that was made, a phone call that was made to Dr. Ramon. There is no direct evidence from Dr. Ramon on what was talked about or anything.
Why didn't the plaintiff present evidence from Ramon?
Well, frankly, Your Honor, this was moved on quite a fast track at the district court level, and there was an opportunity to secure his deposition. However, on summary judgment at this point, if the attempt by the district court is to say that they could rely on the notes of Dr. Feinerman for the truth of what Dr. Ramon said or did, we believe that is completely against the summary judgment standards. The district court could not draw inferences from the hearsay, self-serving notes of these doctors on what another doctor supposedly said.
Why do you say self-serving notes? Weren't they made as part of the course of treatment by Feinerman?
They were apparently recorded at or about that time. Right. The problem here is that the district court came to conclusions about what Dr. Ramon actually thought rather than simply take it as this was a record of something that there may have been a call to Dr. Ramon. That's going a step too far. To say Dr. Ramon agreed with the treatment is to draw an inference from Feinerman's notes that we believe is improper on summary judgment. And getting, Your Honor, back to your question, the other point in time that this happened...
I understand that. If a doctor makes a notation about what another doctor told him, that ought to be admissible, surely. Medical record you're keeping?
Where I think the district court goes too far, though, is to then draw the inference from what may have been part of that conversation to say that that third doctor, that other doctor, somehow agreed. Otherwise, at any point in time, a doctor could enter some note saying, I checked with all my friends who are doctors, and they all agree with what I'm doing. And I don't think that is sufficient to get past summary judgment for them to eliminate issues of material fact here. The second point at which this occurred, Your Honor, in answer to your question, was precisely at the point...
I think that's correct. If the issue is Feinerman's deliberate indifference, he is certainly competent to say that Dr. Ramon told me I was doing the right thing, right? Because that's direct testimony about what he heard. It's not about whether Dr. It would be hearsay if he was trying to say that this is what Dr. Ramon, this was the correct treatment, or this was what Dr. Ramon believed was the direct, was the correct treatment. That would be hearsay. But just testifying to what you heard as indicating what your state of mind was, that's not hearsay.
Well, let me illustrate where the problem comes in, Your Honor, because this happened again concerning a phone conversation alleged to have occurred after a point in time when Mr. Haley had been seen by Dr. Ramon. This was on October 26th. Dr. Ramon's notes indicate that he recommended at that point in time that either surgery or the bone stimulator could be pursued as treatment. What happens then is Dr. Feinerman, on or around November 8th, records notes in his in the medical file that say, "Oh, I talked to Dr. Ramon, and surgery is not an option." Now the district court chose to take those notes.
You're missing the point. When the issue is Feinerman's state of mind, did he know this was the incorrect course of treatment? He is perfectly competent to testify to what he was told by other doctors. That's not hearsay.
I'm not disagreeing with that,
Your
Honor.
So if he testifies, he has notes that say, Ramon said, do this, do that, do the other thing, that is admissible to show that Feinerman was consulting a specialist, and the specialist was giving him, you know, advice or what have you, consistent with what Feinerman was doing.
What I'm arguing, Your Honor, is that on summary judgment, the district court can't use that secondhand reference.
Of course it can. You're missing the point. It's admissible on Feinerman's state of mind. And of course it's usable in summary judgment. That's the whole point. You can only use admissible evidence in summary judgment proceedings.
And again, on the recommendation on surgery, Your Honor, on October 26, Ramon records in his notes that surgery is a treatment course that could be pursued. On November 8th, Feinerman's notes indicate he talked to Ramon and there wasn't going to be any surgery. That then is a contradiction as to what Dr. Ramon actually felt the proper course of treatement was.
But with how does that show deliberate indifference?
The surgery wasn't pursued. As a matter of fact, he sat again after that. At that point in time, they even took the cast off. He was in just a sling, and he had
but
to come.
They were giving him treatment. It was may have been the wrong thing to do, but it wasn't indifference.
Well, it was indifferent to the nerve condition, certainly. There's no evidence in the medical files at all that they attempted to do anything concerning the nerve condition, the involvement of the nerves, until there was actual diagnosis four months later.
The point is that they were treating him. They were treating him, right? They got it wrong, but they were treating him. It wasn't indifference.
And, Your Honor, again, you know, had they put a Band-Aid on the arm every time they saw him, it might be treatment.
But they didn't put
Band-Aid on. They were treating him for the problem.
Admittedly more than a Band-Aid, but, Your Honor, what I would argue is it was not for the problem. They never addressed the misalignment of the bones or the nerve involvement. To say that they were treating then
what's
his
so
fractured arm.
What's so fascinating about this? Look, you've got a perfectly good malpractice case. Why do you strain to fit this into, turn this into a civil rights case? What happened to the malpractice case? Did you bring a malpractice case?
Your Honor,
I was. Did you put all your eggs in this basket?
I was brought into this case well after the time that I think the statute would have allowed me to bring this on his behalf. This is the claim that we had. And I believe that at this point the district court had misapplied the summary judgment standards on this claim.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Gillespie. Mr. Hussig?
May it please the court, I'm Assistant Attorney General Richard Huzzack, counsel for Defendant Appellee Dr. James Krieg, and I will be splitting my time with Andrew Ramaj, who separately represents Defendant Appellee Dr. Feinerman. And so I will limit my remarks to the issues concerning Dr. Krieg. And I urge the court to affirm summary judgment on his behalf because there is no genuine issue to support a finding that he was deliberately indifferent to a serious medical need. There's no dispute that the plaintiff's arm was broken, it was a comminuted fracture, multiple breaks, and that it required medical attention. Our position is, however, that the plaintiff wants to quibble with the ability of the doctors to anticipate the outcome of his treatment. There was a possibility of non-union, that the heel would not bind properly, and there was a possibility of a trapped nerve. But in both cases, Dr. Krieg, who examined the plaintiff on a roughly weekly basis for 9 weeks, was attentive to these concerns and acted prudently, not even in a way that could be characterized as medical malpractice. I think the court has indicated that it's relatively familiar with the record, so let me focus specifically on the arguments that the appellant has made here. There is no need normally for a broken bone to require treatment by a specialist. That is a matter of normal internist or family practice medicine, and Dr. Krieg had, in fact, extensive familiarity with this. He put the bone in a hanging cast. That's the normal way to try and gain realignment of fractured parts of a bone, and, in fact, that is what happened. There was a substantial progress towards alignment. There was both an angulation and a displacement, both of those improved with the application of the hanging cast. So there's nothing wrong with not having referred the plaintiff to an orthopedist for several months. There was also, as Dr. Krieg noted in his notes, I think, on his second examination or third examination, that there was ulnar neuropathy, which is medical terminology for a loss of sensation in the nerve near the elbow. And he referred.
So how do you explain the fact that his arm never recovered?
When you say never recovered, you mean that the displacement then increased when the hanging cast was removed?
No. He doesn't have a normal arm now,
right? Oh, yes.
Or does he?
No, I think we have to acknowledge from the record.
So what went wrong?
Let me politely
you
dispute.
You say it wasn't even, you know, malpractice.
I don't think doctors are required
to break your arm and end up, you know, with a crippled arm.
Let me simply state that not every injury treated by a doctor returns.
But what is it that went wrong here?
Oh, I don't agree that there was any medical fault here. So if that's the
I'm asking you, what went wrong? Right, something went wrong. So there is a crippled arm. Now, what is the cause of that? Do we know? Maybe we don't know.
I think a healed arm after it breaks sometimes suffers this type of impairment of mobility.
Why does it sometimes?
I'm not a doctor. I can't answer that question. I wish I could, but I don't have a medical.
Why are you so confident there's no medical negligence? You have no alternative explanation of how he ends up with a crippled arm.
No, I think there's a false choice here. You're presenting me with the idea that either there's medical negligence or the person should be repaired back to their original condition. But after a broken arm,
I'm just asking for an explanation of why it is that in some cases you have a compound fracture and you end up with you're crippled.
Well, let me entertain the hypothesis that if the course of treatment that the plaintiff recommends should have been followed were followed, conceivably it's possible that the plaintiff would not be in the condition that he is today. On the other hand, with respect to the nerve entrapment, immediately after that became an issue, Dr. Krieg referred the plaintiff to a specialist. Now, he didn't specifically see the specialist. The specialist was consulted through Dr. Feinerman by a phone consultation, and I can address further the hearsay issue, but I think at least with respect to Dr. Krieg, the issue is not the truth of the statement, but his state of mind upon seeing
that
information with any doubt.
We've been through that. Right?
Okay, all right. Well, I think the analysis is slightly different.
Let me ask you this. Was he playing touch football when he broke his arm?
That's a good question. I honestly don't know. Perhaps the record reflects, and I don't recall. It was a serious fracture, and the defendant doctors don't operate with a crystal ball. I think everything they did here was prudent. There was the possibility of a trapped nerve, but Dr. Ramon, according to the notes by Dr. Feinerman, said, you can't do any diagnostic test now that would be useful to show whether it's that or just a bruise. And then it improved, consistent with the treatment. So I see my time is up.
Okay,
I urge the court
to. Thank you, Mr. Ramage.
May it please the court. My name is Andrew Ramage, and I represent Dr. Feinerman. Dr. Feinerman, in short, did everything to follow the recommendations that the specialist indicated should happen. Dr. Feinerman became involved in this case when he contacted Dr. Ramon in in August of 2000. And at that
so
time.
So, what's your theory as to why Haley ended up with a crippled arm?
Well, Your Honor, it was believed that he had a bruised nerve initially, turned out to be an entrapped nerve. With the benefit of hindsight, we know that. But they, based on his symptoms, the doctors believed that he had a bruised nerve and an entrapped nerve have the same symptomology. They cause neuropathy. So they were wrong, but that's not the standard for deliberate indifference. As to his arm being broken, the doctor simply felt that it needed more time, and it ultimately did not end up healing straight, and that's what necessitated the surgery. But again, those were medical decisions that the doctors made at the time based on personal observations of Mr. Haley and in consultation with specialists and addressing the plaintiff's criticisms of Dr. Feinerman for not getting the surgery scheduled faster. Dr. Feinerman's not a surgeon. There's no evidence of a delay. Dr. Feinerman promptly met with Haley each time after he saw the specialist. And it was, in fact, it was the specialist beginning in January of 2001 when he saw the first neurosurgeon who diagnosed a nerve injury that asked for more tests. They promptly scheduled those tests by a neurologist. The neurologist acknowledged the injury, and it just took a month and a half by the time he met with the surgeon twice to get the surgery scheduled. So there's no evidence that Dr. Feinerman failed to follow these specialist recommendations. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Ramajan. And Mr. Gillespie, does he have any time? Well, you can have a minute if you'd like. We asked you a lot of questions. Do you have anything further?
For your information from my client, I believe it was left.
Okay. Well, thank you very much to all three counsel.